And you're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumery. Thank you for tuning in this afternoon. Five candidates have applied to fill an empty seat on the Juneau School District Board of Education after Will Muldoon resigned last month. The candidates include a former school board member and two candidates who ran last year but weren't elected. Jenny Thomas ran for the school board last year and fell short of being elected. Thomas also led the recall campaign for two members after the board closed and consolidated several schools last year and wants to evaluate the effects of that plan if elected. Thomas currently owns Icy Strait Plumbing and Heating. Brenda Taylor was a longtime teacher at Juneau Community Charter School and currently works with the Alaska Heritage Institute as a research coordinator. Taylor said she would focus on supporting teachers through negotiating contracts and filling vacancies. Tom Pannone is the director of program management and administration at the State Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. In his application, Pannone wrote that he went to school in Juneau and wants to, quote, contribute meaningfully to the district. Melissa Colum is a freelance writer and homeschool parent. She says her top priority, if appointed, would be fair teacher contracts. And Steve Whitney was elected to the school board in 2016 and served one term. He didn't run for re-election, saying at the time that he was taking care of a family member instead. In his application, he said he would prioritize union contracts. The board will conduct interviews tomorrow morning at Thunder Mountain Middle School and select a candidate to serve until next school board election in October. More information on candidates can be found on the district's website. And Alaska regulators have assessed a $49,000 fine against Hillcorp for lapses in Cook Inlet offshore well management, the Alaska Beacon reports. Hillcorp has become one of the two biggest oil producers in Alaska, and it's the dominant operator in the Cook Inlet Basin. The Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission said on Monday that Hillcorp failed to meet an annual deadline to discuss its well plugging and abandonment activities. Some Southeast Alaska communities had their earliest harmful algal bloom on record this year, and there's currently a paralytic shellfish toxin advisory across the region for recreational and subsistence harvest. KTOO's Alex Solomon reports that experts say algal blooms are becoming less predictable.
The Southeast Alaska Tribal Ocean Research Network posted a paralytic shellfish toxin advisory for recreational and subsistence harvest of all shellfish species in Sitka, Skagway, and Ketchikan, and for butter clams in Juneau, Cake, Craig, Heidelberg, and Kasan. John Harley is a shellfish expert at the University of Alaska Southeast. He says that Sitka had a harmful algal bloom that led to high shellfish toxins in early April, the earliest since scientists started keeping a record in 2016.
I think that the window in which we have to think about harmful algal blooms occurring is increasing.
An old adage was that months with the letter R were safe for harvest. Harley says researchers don't know whether that was ever a useful rule of thumb, since data only goes back about a decade in this region. But he says that as the ocean warms, blooms will likely become less predictable. Jeff Feldpouch is the Resource Protection Director for the Sitka Tribe of Alaska. He says to never assume shellfish collected from public beaches is safe.
I wouldn't recommend people eat shellfish unless it's tested. Other than that, you're just going to be taking that risk.
Alaska has one of the highest rates of paralytic shellfish poisoning in the world. The state reported more than 100 cases between 1993 and 2021, including five deaths. That's in part because Alaska is the only coastal state in the U.S. without a state-run toxin testing system for recreational and subsistence shellfish harvesting. Feldpouch says testing would be a heavy lift for the state.
The state of Alaska has countless miles of shoreline and potential areas that they would need to sample.
In fact, Alaska has more miles of shoreline than all lower 48 states combined. The state's high rate of shellfish poisoning could also be due in part to a tradition of shellfish harvest across remote communities where testing is less common. But the state does routinely test commercial operations, so store-bought shellfish is considered safe. An alga called Alexandrium catenella is responsible for paralytic shellfish poisoning. The alga produces a neurotoxin that builds up in clams, mussels, and other shellfish that feed on it. There's more toxic algae for them to feast on when conditions are ripe for a bloom, meaning there's plenty of sunlight, nutrients, calm seas, and the water is warm enough. Once the toxin concentration in shellfish is above the federal limit, it's dangerous for people to eat. Even a small amount can kill a person. Symptoms of poisoning include tingling or numbing in the arms, legs, and lips, as well as nausea and difficulty breathing. People with these symptoms should seek medical care immediately. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
And there's been talk about a potential second bridge between Juneau and Douglas Island for decades. Now, local and state transportation officials are wrapping up a study that hones in on five locations. Officials hosted an open house meeting yesterday to share their findings and gather public input for the project's next steps. KTOO's Clarice Larson was there and has this story.
Since at least the 80s, people have been talking about building a new bridge between Juneau and Douglas Island to supplement the existing downtown bridge. And on Thursday night, about 150 people gathered at an open house downtown to talk about it some more. Proponents for the so-called second crossing say it would ease the commute for Douglas residents, increase the island's access to emergency services, and open access to undeveloped city and tribal lands. North Douglas resident Barbara Berg says she would directly benefit from a second bridge.
We do live far enough out that it's we have to factor that in when we go into shop and when we go to the doctor and all that kind of stuff. And if it were a quicker trip, yes, that would probably be a help.
For the past few years, the city and the Alaska Department of Transportation have been studying possible locations for a crossing. Now, they've whittled it down to 5 locations, and there's also a no-build option. The need for a second crossing has been a common talking point brought up by residents. That's after a cruise line in Goldbelt Incorporated announced plans to develop a new cruise ship port on West Douglas last fall. The city also recently rezoned more than 200 acres of city-owned land on North Douglas to increase the housing density in those areas. Greg Lockwood is the project's manager with the State Department of Transportation. At the open house, he said that getting input from residents is crucial for figuring out which option they ultimately choose.
Especially, you know, on a project like this, it is controversial. It's so beneficial to get everybody together early on, see how everybody's feeling, see what everybody's freaked out about, and let's just get it all on the table early.
The next step is an environmental review process, which will take a deeper look at the options to assess any environmental impacts. 4 of the 5 proposed routes would cut through the Mendenhall State Game Refuge. Lockwood says it would likely take 2 years to complete the review. And then?
In a best case scenario, you know, we could be doing the final design here in like 3 years, you know, and then construction in like 4 or 5 years starting, you know.
Denise Koch with the city's Public Works says that gathering funding for the project is already in the works, but it's going to be a big lift.
You know, we're talking about projects that are in the hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, $340 million to $500 million. So what we would do is we would aggressively pursue federal funding.
She says it will also likely require some local buy-in, likely in the form of a local match to any federal contributions, and that could be tens of millions of dollars. In 2010, Juneau voters shot down a 10-year temporary 1% sales tax that would have provided funding for a new bridge. Some attendees at the open house, like downtown resident Stuart Cohen, argue that they don't think another bridge is needed.
Overall, this project is a luxury. It's not a necessity. And as far as the safety stuff, yeah, we could get hit by a meteorite, but we don't spend $500,000 on a special meteorite shield. And I view the safety arguments in this about the same way.
His comments and others shared at the meeting will help inform the process as it moves along. Officials say there will be more chances to comment in the future before there's a final selection. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
And thousands of new books, many by Indigenous writers, are landing in the hands of kids across Southeast Alaska this month. A series of book drops is a result of a partnership between the region's largest tribal government and a Native-led nonprofit with roots in the Navajo and Hopi nations. At Coctegu Wuhin Elementary, kids swarm around tables piled with books.
I have Woman in Science, Ada Love Ellis, Elace.
Audrey Ia is in third grade. She says she loves reading.
I liked this one because I read the back of it and I got really interested in it, and I like science books.
She wants to be a scientist.
I like to, like, blow stuff up at my house, but my mom always says no.
Ia isn't the only one who has a stack of books in her arms. Throughout the common area, dozens of kids scurried around with their own finds. Some books are for kids as young as 5 or 6 years old, and some are saved for older readers. And the ones for elementary-age kids are going fast. The Central Council of the Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska is hosting the drop. Special Projects Manager Tristan Duville surveys the pandemonium with visible emotion.
Oh my gosh, it's so incredible. It's like amazing, mind-blowing. Couldn't be more exciting. I'm like, this is crazy.
Months ago, he reached out to Indian Girls Book Club, a nonprofit that brings books to Indigenous communities, to float the idea of book drops in Southeast Alaska. Earlier this month, while unpacking all the donated books, He said he knows firsthand that not all Alaska students have ready access to fun reading material.
I grew up in a rural community. I grew up on Prince Wales Island in Craig and Kilauea. And there were times when it wasn't super accessible to even get to the library.
And that kind of access is the point for Kinsale Drake, the founder of Indian Girls Book Club. She says she wishes there were book drops like this when she was growing up. She's a poet, and she thinks she may have found her passion earlier if she'd had more exposure to Native writers.
Publishers care about money. They don't care about representation unless it's making them money. And so I think, you know, the anger and the sadness, I think, of dealing with that as somebody who wants every Native kid to be able to have books with characters that look like them, that make them feel confident, that make them feel happy and seen and loved.
So she started thinking of ways to get books into the hands of Indigenous youth. Her organization started delivering books throughout the Navajo and Hopi Nations in a pink van in 2023. Since then, they've traveled across the United States with books in tow. She says events like these show publishers that there is a market for stories about and for Indigenous youth.
When we come out here and we have a room full of kids who are, like, so excited to have books like this, it's like, you know, we're showing them in their face, this is representation, this is why it's important, and you're not going to tell us that it's not important.
And this book tour will make it to villages in Southeast, too. Next, books will land in Yakutat, Kluwak, and Heidelberg. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's currently 50 degrees and raining. It looks like we're going to get some more rain tonight, and tomorrow might be rainy as well, but it might taper off over the course of the day. Sunday, it might be dry with a high of 52 degrees. You're listening to KTOO.